Welcome, everyone. I'm Mike Siggers of Simplenomics.com, and tonight you're going to learn more about what a dentist can teach you about business, life, and success. Our guest comes to us with principles for success that go beyond theory or wishful thinking. Dr. Joe Capista shares insights into the very principles and systems that took him from growing up in an average blue-collar Philadelphia neighborhood, struggling with his studies as a young boy, to becoming a thought leader in his industry. He's built a multi-million dollar dental practice from the ground up. He's enjoyed a 34-year marriage, and he's used all of the things that he's learned in conjunction to give back to his community. Welcome to the call, Dr. Joe Capista, and as they say on ESPN, you're on the hot seat.
Hey, thank you, Mike. Great to be with you. Thank you for having me on.
Glad to be here and appreciate you coming along. As I was reading your book when I first got it, my wife read it after me and actually did a review on it too, but she got on me because there's so many green highlighter marks in the first few chapters alone that it kind of was tough for her to read. She's like, "What in the world did you do?" And I said, I just couldn't quit. There's so many little nuggets, golden nuggets of wisdom and truth, and why hadn't I thought of that, or gee, why am I not doing that, and all those type of things. Tell me, where did you get that title, and what prompted you to write that book?
Well, Mike, it's funny, first, what prompted me to write the book? Over the last couple of years, I've been doing presentations, seminars, and workshops, started out mostly for dental groups, and it's expanded to be with business groups. And when I would get done the presentation, they would say, "Well, how do we get this information?" And I said, "Well, I hope you took notes." And they said, "No, we didn't." or I said, "It's in my PowerPoint." And so basically I said, "I'll write the book. This way it's a way to transfer the information." So that was the reason I wrote the book. And the title kind of came about because as I would start, I was doing actually some talks at college universities and businesses, and I would start to say, they would look at me, and I'd say, "Well, I guess you're sitting there thinking, what's a dentist going to teach me about a business life or success? A dentist gets out of school, they come, they pay him lots of money, he goes home rich and happy, and that's what the way it was years ago, but it's not that way today." So that's kind of how the title came about. So
it's nothing better than life giving you what you need for a title of a book.
Yeah,
long before it was popular to subscribe to beliefs such as the law of attraction, you had seemingly dedicated yourself to the study of the power and the impact that the mind and spirit have in creating your own reality. And it seems like you've studied for over 30 years, the power of thinking, the mind, goal setting, and all that. Tell us how did that come about? How did you get to that point to start to notice and record it, which is the most important part?
Part of it, and this wasn't something I sat down consciously to do. I've been blessed with a mentor, Charlie Shiva, who I reference in the book quite a bit. And, Mike, over the years, early on, he told me the importance of having mentors and the importance of thinking and how it controls your actions. And although I didn't understand maybe the whole science behind it, I knew that, my thoughts were controlling my actions and my attitude. And years ago, he had me listen to a man named Earl Nightingale, which I'm sure many of the people know who he is. He's dead now, but I listened to his, it's actually been re-released, The Strangest Secret, and The Strangest Secret is you become what you think about. So I would listen to that, and I had taken courses in Adventures in Attitude, learned behavior styles, and always knew that the thinking had an impact on the way I behaved. But once again, I didn't really know the science behind it. And then I guess it was about 4 years ago, when Malcolm Gladwell's book, Blink, came out, I read that book, and that started me on a new quest. And once again, I always knew the importance of this, but in the book, Malcolm Gladwell was a psychologist, and he showed through experimentation how thoughts or the things we were putting into our unconscious, mainly our thoughts, would actually affect our body physiology and our behavior. And many, many times the thoughts were not, long, drawn-out things. They were actually, that's why they call it blink, they were thin-sliced events, very short-acting things. And then about a year later, I had taken a course by James Ray, who was a member of, he was actually a contributor to the book The Secret, and his course was called The Science of Success. And in that course, he really showed through quantum physics, you know, things that made a lot of sense to me, how your thoughts with an emotion created the feeling, and that feeling created that that vibration or wave or frequency that was sent out to the universe and then attracted back to you, a la the law of attraction. And how those feelings created a certain action, and the action created the results. And so it wasn't something that I sat down over a period of 30 years to learn the law of attraction or learn thinking. It was always drummed into me through my mentor, Charlie Schiavo, the importance of the thinking. So that was an evolution that's taken years and years and years. And I mean, I talk quite a bit about controlling your thinking and the importance of that, but, and we can talk about that later if you like, but I think that, you know, it didn't happen by reading one book. It took lots and lots of mentors. I mean, I have lists of Zig Ziglar, Brian Tracy, all the greats who talked about, you know, attitude and thinking, and that's basically how it came about.
How much did you learn as you started to put these words down on paper? How much more did you learn, or how much more vivid did it become for you as compared to what you thought you already knew before you started?
That's a great question, Mike, because my mentor, Charlie Schiavo, has always taught me, he said, years ago, he said, Joe, if you read something, you retain a certain percentage. If you read it and see it, you retain a higher percentage. If you read it, see it, and teach it, you retain the greatest percentage. So by actually being forced to take what I was already knew, put it on paper, and then be teaching other people it, it has really brought what I call from the back of the mind to the front of the mind. And it's really, you know, it's made me a better person because it makes me be conscious of it all the time. So that's a great question because, you know, by you read a book and you put it down, you get something out of it. But if you read it and see it, you get more. And if you read it, see it, and teach it, you get a lot more out of it.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons that I started doing teleseminars. So I had to put questions down on paper. So I had to actually, you know, I'm involved, even though I'm not the speaker, I'm involved in the teaching of it, and it seems that I retain a lot more of it than when I was just reading books and doing a review.
Sure, it forces you to research the background and keep it in front of your mind.
Yep. Well, speaking of teaching, you mentioned that you do a lot of speaking to civic groups, college students, business owners, and a cross-section of people that basically want to know how you achieve and how they can achieve really high levels of success. And that was something that you talked about, you know, and then explained as the success triangle. So tell everybody that's out there, what exactly is the success triangle?
Well, Mike, in the book, I think there's about four chapters, and that's somewhat the business part of the book, and it actually is, if you can imagine a triangle, at the top there's the product, internal market, external marketing. On the lower right hand side is a systemized sales presentation, and on the left side is a systemized sales call. The reason that this triangle came about is because in my world as a dentist, we were going through somewhat of a market shift where we were going from need-based dentistry, by that I mean people come in with something broken and they need to fix it and we fix it, to want-based dentistry, to cosmetics. And because of that, we were forced to do something we hadn't done, that was external market. And that's at the top of the triangle. And I knew that if I was going to start an external market, that was going to cost me money. So I wanted to make sure I started to ask myself, well, what other parts of my business are essential to have my dollar be well spent and to help me be successful? So I said, obviously, a good product. I need to be a good dentist. I need to be a good cosmetic dentist, specifically, if I'm going to market that particular thing. Secondly, we needed good internal marketing. I wanted to treat people well. Now, we already were doing a good job at that, but, you know, there's always room to improve that. So those three things at the top, the product, internal marketing, external marketing, were essential items I thought you needed to have. The other thing was that, you know, when people come into us, we have to talk to them. So I needed to have good sales skills, when they come into us, we have to have a systemized way to encounter them. So they were the parts of it. So I started to say, well, okay, before I spend money, because the product is what my dentistry is, the internal marketing, that's what the customer sees, feels, hears, and touches. It's what bombards their senses. It makes them want to be there. It makes them like doing business with you. Those two things are essential, the good product and internal marketing, because those two things are what generate referrals. And referrals are what most services business grow by. External marketing, that third component at the top, only supports those two other things, the product and the marketing, internal marketing. So I contended that before I take my after-profit dollars, which is money right out of my pocket, and spend it, I want to make sure that first I'm going to give them a good product, and second they're going to be treated well. And let me take that out of the dental world and put it like in the restaurant business, because it's easier to explain that way. If you had a restaurant and you had bad food and good customer service and a nice facility, and you spend money to market, is that money well spent? Obviously no. People don't go back to bad food. Now, the other side of the coin is you had good food and not such great service and not such great facility, and you spend money to market. Is that money well spent? Well, once again, not so good, but better than the first time. See, the difference here is because people will go back to the good food and tolerate the bad service and tolerate the facility, but they don't refer. And really, that's my goal, not to just spend money on marketing to get people in, but to get them in, like what they get, and send other people to me and stay. So let's So let's assume we have this great thing at the top of the triangle. This product and marketing is going great. What happens? More people come to me. On the lower right hand side is that the systemized sales presentation. I teach a sales presentation which was taught to me by my mentor Charlie Schiavo, where you learn to get someone's attention, interest, desire, and action. And you do it in a four-step way. And I can show you how to do it. And we do it based on person's behavior style. I don't know if you're... Are you familiar with DISC, the ISC behavior style at all, Mike?
I'm sure I've read it, but can you explain it for everybody?
Basically, it's understanding the people's behavior and speaking to them in a way whereby they want to be spoken to and changing your behavior style to match your customer's behavior style. Well, that's in the sales presentation. But the critical part of the triangle, which ties all this together, is the sales call, where your customer encounter takes place. Because in that, you're trying to create a relationship, value or perceived value for your product or service, and an experience. And if you can do those three things, you can create that relationship, value, and experience, you'll get trust and confidence. If you get trust and confidence on the left-hand side of the triangle, and you're not that great in your sales presentation, people will still say yes to you based on their trust and confidence. And I know that because when I started out, I didn't know anything about sales, but people would buy because they liked what I was doing. And so that part on the right-hand side, the presentation actually fits into your sales call. And the other part is your internal marketing. It's the experience. Remember I said you wanted to try to create an experience. In Philadelphia, we have this wonderful restaurant called Lebec Finn. Well, Lebec Finn is cost over $400 to go there for a couple. Well,
nice.
I always kid people. I say there's no food worth $400. But when you go to Lebec Finn, Mike, you're not buying food; you're buying an experience,
a memory.
And that's, pardon me,
a memory.
And memory, yeah, exactly, and something that you take home with you. You forget the food, but you forget how you treat it. And that's what I'm trying to have in that sales call, that relationship where you use the DISC behavior styles so that people are like the way they're treated, second, value for the product or service, and then the experience. The experience can be – see, every other dentist does what I do. But if I can create an experience whereby people want to come back to me, then that makes them want to pay my prices and my fees and like being there. The reason that it's critical is because the things at the bottom, that sales call and the presentation, if you do that well, you can take a closure rate of maybe only 30% or 30, 35% and take it to a 70 or 80%. So now if you have people saying yes 3 out of 10 times, and now all of a sudden they're saying yes 6 or 7 out of 10 times, the money you're spending at that top gives you a much greater return and more dollars fall to the bottom line. Does that all fit together? Does that seem to fit, make sense?
Yeah. If you're converting 6 out of 10 versus 3 out of 10, you're spending half as much per person.
Exactly.
But theoretically, you could spend it on twice as many people.
Exactly.
And get them in to convert twice as many of them.
Sure. Because you're already spending the money for your product and your marketing, so why not convert more people?
Yeah.
So that was why I was reluctant to spend a lot of external marketing dollars until I was better at my presentation, better at handling my customer, because I wanted them to come back and send more people and say yes, basically.
I hate to say it, but it's kind of revolutionary for a lot of people, because there's a lot of people out there spending a lot of advertising dollars that shouldn't be.
Exactly.
But they're probably spending a corporation's money, and you were spending your money.
It makes a difference when it's coming out of my pocket versus.
Yeah. Speaking of this external marketing, there on the Ask Joe Live page, there's still a question box up there, and one of the listeners has a question relating to that, and it just says everything you said, but the final part of the question says, can you give me an idea about how to look for trends that my external marketing dollars are being spent wisely?
Yeah, and that changes probably industry to industry, but I think there's two parts of external marketing that the person asking the question would have to know. First, there's the branding part of marketing whereby you need to be known. And then there's the second part of marketing whereby you need to be perceived as the expert. And so many times people confuse their external marketing, and you talk about trend, they think that marketing doesn't change, because it changes all the time. It's even changed in the last few years from what I do. If you're only marketing, if advertising is the only part of your external marketing, you may be like everybody else and be not spending your money wisely. Like what I've done is two major things that I've done external marketing, which I think fits into the trend of the dental world anyway, is I don't put ads in the paper about what we do. I put ads in the paper about seminars, about inviting people to learn about cosmetic dentistry, learn about Invisalign dentistry, learn about the types of dentistry we do. There's a saying, you want to become a resource before you become a vendor. So I try to be the resource before I'm the vendor.
I'm sorry. You're basically creating content, and content is king.
Exactly. And that's what, Mike, I've had people call the office and say, I can't come to the seminar, but I want to make an appointment to learn more about your office. But if I put an ad in the paper just with what we do, people don't really care what we do. They want to know how they're going to learn and how it's going to help them.
Yeah, they want to know what you can do for you. They're listening to WIIFN, What's In It For Me.
Yes,
theoretically,
you're right.
You're an information marketer.
Exactly. The other thing that I've done, which has been successful for marketing trend, is that I'm the 76ers dance team, the Philadelphia 76ers dance team cosmetic dentist. Well, I put my picture in the paper surrounded by these beautiful dancers, and that gets the perception as the expert. I've had people come to me and say, if you can fix their teeth, you can fix my teeth. It's the stupidest, craziest thing for marketing, but it is part of marketing. So I think, to answer the listener's question, I think you have to see, where your business is going, and almost try to pick trends, but be different than everybody else. Because if you're the same as everybody else, the marketing dollars aren't going to give you the return, unless you're just looking for branding, which is different.
Yeah, there's a large difference between branding, advertising, and marketing, and I think some of the people out there confuse those and think that's one amalgamous term, that it all means the same thing, and it doesn't.
You're right, Mike. They're all parts of the marketing.
Yep. Speaking of using that information that you're giving out, that content, helping those people, is that how you built your list of patients into such a large number of people? Or is that only part of it?
That's part. Mike, up until the year 2000, we did hardly probably only less than, oh my gosh, hardly anything was spent on external marketing. Our business grew on the good product, the good internal marketing, and basically referral generations. You get to a point, though, where if you want to get to a higher level of growth, because we don't have a typical dental office. We have 6 dentists, 47 employees. So to maintain that growth and to continue to grow, you need more people coming in. So the marketing became essential to us. But most of our successes that brought us to that level was not through marketing, external marketing. It was through real good customer service, real good internal marketing, and a real good product.
Well, real good product is a great start, and having all those other parts of the process be equal to or greater than is something that, as a customer of a dentist, I can only dream about.
Well,
moving through the book a little further, you also talk about the 5 parts of success. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure, Mike. I think if I was standing in front of a group of people today and I had a blackboard behind me and I said, you know, let's write down all the things you need to be successful, both in your personal life and in your business world, because in my book and in my belief is that, you know, my areas of success are not exclusive of each other, that I want to be successful in both my business world and in my personal life in order to achieve what I call in the book total success and ultimately happiness. And I don't think the areas, are exclusive of each other. If you only have success in one area, then in my eyes, you know, you're not as successful as you should or could be. So if I said, you know, what do we need to be successful? We could write hundreds of things down, but I've kind of narrowed it down to 5 basic things. First, be an expert at what you do. Have a great product or service. Second, develop sales and marketing skills. Third, get help from mentors. Have people teach you what you don't know. Control the way you think, because thinking controls your actions. And fifth, have balance in your life. Now, those 5 things have 2 components, as I say, for your business world and your personal world. First, you know, to be an expert at what you do. You know, obviously, as a dentist, I want to be the best that I can be. But in my personal life, I want to be the best husband, the best father, the best son that I can be. I want to be the best I can with my relationships, my employees, and my friends. So I strive to be an expert in 2 areas. And, you know, too many times people are hard on themselves, Mike. They think, well, I'm not good at this or I'm not the best. You know, as a dentist, if I was tested against other dentists in Pennsylvania, I would probably find that I'm not the best dentist, clinically. I have other skills that may be better, but clinically I may not be the best dentist. And I'm okay with that because I know that I've taken steps through education, even in the last 7 years, to learn to be the best dentist that I can be. And that's really all I can do, is be the best that I can be. So when I put my head on the pillow at night, I know I've done the best I can for my patient. Same thing as a father or a parent, as a husband. You know, I take the steps to control that relationship and make sure that it's the best that it can be.
Yeah, it seems America, which we deal with more than the world, America seems to suffer from self-esteem issues, and we're way too hard on ourselves and don't realize that, you know, we're really probably not that bad, most of us anyway.
It's funny you say that. I got a call from a dentist who had read my book, and he said, I think I'm a failure because I can't do. And I, after I got done talking to him, he had so many things good, and his business was not what it could be or should be. And he was equating that to being a failure. And I said, you know, if you're the best you can be, you're making as much as you can. That doesn't mean, you know, don't compare yourself to other people. You know, look at if you're doing the best you can, that's what you. But you know, be honest with yourself too. So it's a double-edged sword in that respect too.
Yeah.
But you're right. You know, the second part, develop sales and marketing skills. Like, I could tell you that the success of your business is directly proportional to your ability to sell and market. Also, the success of your life is directly proportional to your ability to sell and market. Because
absolutely.
Yeah. People think of sales as selling this product. Well, we're selling products all the time. We're selling services, And we're also selling ideas. And the better that I can be in my business world and in my personal world to get my ideas accepted and my products accepted and my service accepted, the happier everybody is. And sales, you know, has a negative connotation, and I do a whole thing on what sales is and what it is not. But really, if sales is done properly, the person that benefits is the person that's being sold. And they, in fact, when I teach sales, I tell people, I say, if once value has been established, value whether it's for an idea or a product or a service, and you don't have the ability to communicate to the person you're working with so that they move ahead and accept what you're trying to have them do or buy, and it's going to benefit them and the value's been there, and they don't do it, then you're failing. You have to learn the skills so that that person's going to be better off by dealing with you than if they didn't deal with you. And that's what I mean about sales, not manipulation. It's not a way to have people do things that you're going to benefit more than they benefit from. Does that fit into what you feel or think? I mean,
yeah, I'm a salesman of a couple of decades, you know, daily, and I've gotten past the point where I get involved in each sale. I get more involved in making sure what that person needs, whether I sell it or not, and making sure that they see the value in what they're doing so that they can convince themselves of what they need, because it's the same thing that gets me to eat lunch at a certain place is the same thing that gets them to buy a certain product, comfort.
Sure.
If I go in there every day and they say, "Hey, Mike," you know, I feel a lot more comfortable than if they say, "Welcome to blah, blah, blah," wherever we're at, you know, if they know me, if they're comfortable, if they say, "Do you want an iced green tea again today?" because they know that's what I drink, you know, I'm more comfortable. You know, it just makes the world easier. It makes the sale easier.
Sure.
And it's about first creating value. One of the pieces of content that I've got, I call it a want. I don't try to make a sale. I try to create a want.
That's right.
But I have to involve myself into them to find out what is it that they really need, not what they want. What do they need? They're going to buy what they want. I need to find out what they need and try to help them get to that
help
point.
Help them get to that, to say yes. I always say I want to help them say yes to the things that they want or need. And I'm just helping them, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, the third thing was to get help from mentors. And in the book I reference it quite a bit, because mentors to me are people who have provided accelerated learning. You know, the things that Charlie taught me over 25 years, I could not have learned in 100 years, because he would spend time with me, the health of the business, and then the health of me as a person. And the things that he could not give to me, he directed me to people who had the information. And we need mentors. You know, I've been fortunate. Charlie was a mentor for my business world and in my personal world, but we need mentors or people to help us in both areas of our life, because so many times in our business world, you know, we think it's going to happen by just reading something. Or, you know, you have to sometimes pay consultants to come in, pay people to help you who know more than you do. Also in your personal life, you know, I make it a point to associate with people who I call are doing it, that are successful, happy people, they're moral people. I want to be around those kind of people. So I'm not necessarily paying them, although I have paid people to help me with things in my personal life for education to make me be a better person. So in both worlds, the business world and in your personal world, mentors provide that accelerated learning. And many times you have to pay them, but many times you don't have to pay them. And they're there to help. They're there to make you get the knowledge a lot quicker.
Yeah. The dentist that you were talking to is probably one of those people that would benefit from some type of lunchtime brainstorm group that where they sat together every day and brainstormed and thought, or, you know, once a week or something. And once he talked to some other people, he found out, you know, I'm not so bad, because these guys have got problems too. And here's what I would do, and here's what, you know, and when you're telling them, talking about, here's what I ran into, they say, here's what I do, and, you know, they're all sharing freely. They're not charging each other, but they're helping each other.
People think they have to pay for the mentors. If you do the brainstorming or the mastermind groups like that, you know, they work really, really well. And unfortunately, I say sometimes people get into that mode of thinking that they're not I felt so bad when he said he felt like he was a failure, because he wasn't a failure. He has so many good things going for him. But,
you mentioned the importance of controlling, for a person to control their thoughts. How did you discover, the importance of that, and why is it so important?
Well, that's actually the fourth thing on the success, total success, because, the thinking is the toggle switch here, and the toggle switch being the thing that turns everything off and on. It was a long evolution, as I say, when I over the years through the people that Charlie had me go to. But then I think the key was when I had taken the James Ray course, because I go through this whole process. Success has very little to do with skills and very little to do with intelligence. It has more to do with the way you think, the way you feel, and the way you act. And I know that in my own life that's been very, very true. So the thinking has enabled me, because I know people who are much smarter than me who have not been successful, but I know the controlling of the thinking, because that controls my feelings and my actions. That's helped me be successful in the other areas of my life. First, it's pretty hard to be an expert in your relationships and in your business world if your thinking is that you're not the best, like that other Dennis was, or that you're not a good person. So that's the toggle switch for there. It's pretty hard to have sales and marketing skills and be able to do them convincingly if your thinking is that, you're not the best and that you don't have the best product, or you don't have, the control of the way you talk to people. Thirdly, the mentors part, the thinking is critical for having mentors, because people could tell you anything, but if you don't have the mindset to take the action because of the way you feel and you act, the thoughts won't help you unless you have the right thought in your head. So the toggle switch takes place for the mentors, for the sales marketing, and for the experts. But lastly, and they didn't talk too much about this yet, is the fifth part was the balance in life. That's your work world, your physical world, your spiritual world, and your relationships. If you're thinking, I say it this way, if your thinking is controlling you, instead of you controlling your thinking, it's pretty hard to have a good work world. It's hard to be good in your relationships. It's hard to have a healthy life, and it's hard to have a spiritual side of your life, an internal quietness in your life. And so many times in our world, the thinking controls us instead of us controlling the thinking. And it doesn't happen where you're great one day and bad the next day. It comes in, I call it, in nibbles. You got the nibble of the things that aren't going so well, and all of a sudden there's the bite. And then when the bite takes place, sometimes it's a little too far along, and now your thinking starts to control you. So the thinking, I know, is important for my success, because there were times in my life when the thinking wasn't what it should be. And I look back at that, do we have time for a quick story on this?
Absolutely, because the minute you said that, it brought up some of the foolish, quote-unquote, stupid things I did, and the first thing I thought of when you said that was probably during his youth.
Well, it was actually in the year 2004.
wasn't that long ago then, was
no.
it?
No. But I've had many before that, but I think that the importance, and we could talk about goals maybe, because goals are what helped me keep my thinking on track, but in 2004, I was kind of going through the motions. I could care less if people said yes, no, or maybe to the things I was doing. I didn't really, I was, by other dentist standards, I was doing very well, but by my own standards, I was not doing what I would normally do. I was not hitting my monthly goal. I was not enjoying work. I was actually making my life a struggle and not happy with the way things were, and I think my patients detected it, and I think my employees detected it. So from that June of 2004 till December of 2004, I was living in this struggle and actually enjoying the crappy feeling, if you want to say it. I hate to say it that way, but I was actually enjoying the struggle.
And I think we've all been there.
Yeah, and you got to remember, I'm a person who's a very positive, I'm out there, top thinking good all the time. December comes, I go to this training center. This alludes back to what you had spoken about earlier. It's called the Las Vegas Institute, and that's where I train for my cosmetics. Well, I take a dental course there that's not a very exciting course. It's on bites. But the key thing was I was associating with dentists who were doing it. By that I mean they were successful, they liked their work, they were making a good living, they were happy with what they were doing. Well, I came back from there, and I say you can go to a place like that, never take a course, and just associate with these people and come back with a different attitude about things. And so I came back from there, and for the next 6 months, I hit my monthly goal every month. Then the summer came, and I kind of take some months off. I don't work as hard. I go to the beach a bit in the summertime. And so August comes, I go back, I take another two-part course, and then September, October, November, I am just so fired up I could have jumped through walls. I was back associating with people who were doing it. I was feeling good about myself. And so the next 3 months, I had my best 3 months as a dentist ever. I was number one in my laboratory. And from that point on, I haven't looked back. And the reason I say that this is important is because I didn't get any new skills. And I didn't get any more intelligence, but I just changed the way I thought. And that thinking helped me change my actions and my results. And that's really the key here. So we all go through these times of the thoughts starting to not go the right direction, and it's normal. But the key is to be able to recognize when it's happening, be able to turn it around, and take control of your life again with it.
Out of those five parts of the that you brought up to achieving total success, which one of those do you think that most people need improvement on more than any of the other ones?
Definitely the thinking part.
Yeah.
Because, once again, it's so easy to have that, you know, and people ask me all the time, well, how do you do that? You know, I don't think about what I'm going to think about. And I say, well, can do that. And how I do it is through my goals. Now, I was schooled long time ago through Charlie to write my goals down, and I've been doing it for years and years and years. First of all, I have people tell me, well, I don't have to write my goals down because I know what I want. Well, I can tell you that you have to write them down, because if you don't, your wants change and you lose track of things. And by having your goals written down and asking for what you want, not what you don't want, that keeps your thinking on track, because I have specific goals for my business world, my relationships, for my spirituality, for my physical world, and for my speaking, you know, my side businesses and things. And I repeat those goals to myself in the morning at least once or twice in the day and before I go to bed at night. So I'm actively putting into my mind the things that I want. And that helps to push out or keep out the things that are taking me away from my goals. And I have a saying that says, are my thoughts and actions moving me closer or further away from my goals? And are my goals moving me closer or further away from happiness? And that's what I reevaluate all the time. So you can control your thinking. Many times, you know, it's a matter of asking for what you want in the form of the goal and writing it down. And like so many times, people are asking for things, but they're asking for it in the wrong way. And this goes back to the law of attraction. They're saying things like, well, I don't want to be unhealthy, I don't want to be poor, and I don't want to be sad. You can say, I want to be healthy, I want to be happy, and I want to be prosperous. You're asking, you know, and in your goals, you can write it that specific way. And one of the things that James Ray taught me was, when you ask for something, add an emotion to it. So now I don't just say, I want this. I say, I am so excited, happy, and grateful now that I do this. And I put it in the present state. And that's how my goal is stated to me. I'm so excited, happy, and grateful now that I produce a certain amount of month, and that my relationship with my wife is such, and that my physical, you know, so it's not I want, I want, I want, I want, I want. Does that makes some sense.
There's more to it than one.
There's more to it than one. And it's the emotion that goes with that. That creates the wanting, and that's where I think so many times people think that this is an exercise whereby I could say, well, you could sit in your room all day and say, I think I want a Porsche. And you can go down your driveway, there's never going to be a Porsche there. This is about work. This is about your thought creating a feeling that creates an action. And actions create results. Nothing else creates results except getting off your end and doing something. But if you don't put those right thoughts and feelings, you're not going to get the right actions. You're not going to get the right results. So you get me all excited and I start talking fast. I'm sorry.
You mentioned emotion. The emotion is basically an accelerant to that thought.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You got to put an emotion with that. You really do.
You mentioned spirituality, and it would be impossible to read your book and not see that spirituality and spiritual principles are an important part of your life. Tell us, share with the listeners why living a spiritual life is so important.
Well, I didn't talk much about the balance, but maybe I can just, if the listeners want to draw a circle, and at the top put relationships, on the bottom put work, on the right-hand side put your physical or external world, and your left-hand side put your spiritual or internal world. In those four areas, we have choices. In the work world, we can work too much or too little. If you do either one of those things, it affects your relationships and your health. In our relationships, we can be not so good there, and if you're cheating on your wife or can't stay in a relationship or be faithful to a person for a period of time, or your children are in trouble all the time, that affects the way you go to work. It also affects your health. In your world of your physical world, if your health is not the way it should be, that affects the way you go to work. It affects your effectiveness in your work world. It affects your ability for enthusiasm and stamina. It also affects your relationships. Well, I know in my world, when those three things were not the way they should be, my spiritual world and my internal peace was not the way it should be. At the time when I was younger, probably in my early 30s, I thought spirituality was going to church. Well, I know now that that's not the case. And for me, spirituality is a church and a God, but it doesn't have to be that. First, and there's parts that precede other parts. If you want to have a religious or a God in your life, that's okay. If you don't, that's okay too. But you need to have quietness in your life. You need to have that part of spirituality in your life. If you have that, it can grow into those other things. Just as in your work world, you have to have systems to precede efficiency. In your relationships world, you have to have love of yourself to precede loving others. In your health world, you have to have health to precede fitness. Well, in your spiritual world, you need to have quietness in your life. And there was a time when I didn't have that in my life. And Charlie was a big influence here. He helped me to take steps to take time and develop quiet time in my life. And from that, it's grown into, you know, a religion and a God. But once again, you need to have, if people choose not to have a religion or God, that's okay. But in order to have the spirituality and you need to have a quietness, because the quietness provides the opportunity to be with yourself. And one of the things James Ray said, which I thought was a great quote, he said, if you can't stand to be with yourself for 30 minutes, how would you expect someone else to be with you for 30 minutes? And it makes sense.
Yep.
Because we live in a world today where we are bombarded with things. You know, there's iPods, Blackberries, everybody's getting I always say we're so connected, we're disconnected.
Yep.
And, you know, I saw a cartoon where a guy had his arms around his wife, kissing her hello after a day's work, and he's behind her back working a Blackberry. And I mean, and that's kind of where we are today. You walk down our cities, everybody has something stuck in their ear, and I say we're so connected, we're disconnected, and you can't hear for the noise. And spirituality became a big part of my life because I lead a pretty fast-paced work business world, especially years ago, not as much today. And I was just, I was not a happy person. And I didn't have the time for myself. And Charlie had me start to go to church in the morning and just spend time in a quiet setting. It had nothing to do with, you know, being at a mass. It had to be with being in a quiet setting. I would go by myself and just sit there. And I would think about the things I did the day before, that day, and the next day. I was getting answers to questions I wasn't able to get answers to. In my present world, I belong to a reflection group. It has nothing to do with any religious denomination. We relate things to the scripture readings and how it affects our daily life as far as being a good person. I do things like I don't play the radio in my car hardly ever. I say prayers for people who are sick. I used to walk in the house, Mike, and put every TV and radio on I could find. I was just entertaining myself. I don't do that anymore. I take time to sit quietly. I just, my wife knows when I come in. I give her a kiss hello. I need time to just be quiet and just think to myself. I meditate in the daytime when I can. Because when you leave yourself open to the quietness, and Thomas Edison did this. He didn't even know what he was doing. Thomas Edison would sit. He would try to, when he knew he wasn't getting good ideas for inventions, he would, especially in the afternoon when he was tired, he would sit in a chair with a lead ball in his hand, and he would just sit there, and he didn't want to fall asleep, but he knew he wanted to get to a lower level of consciousness. And that's really what the spirituality for me is. It's getting to that lower state. He would sit there, and once he felt like he was falling asleep, the ball would drop and it would wake him up, because he really didn't want to fall asleep, but he just wanted to get to that, see, that lower state of consciousness. When he woke up, he knew he had better ideas, and he didn't know why. We know now why, because when people go from the conscious state to a lower conscious level to the unconscious level or the sleep state, they go through different brain waves. And when you're in that stage before sleep, you have higher alpha waves. When people have higher alpha waves, they're more open to creativity. And I've been involved with experiments where that's actually been done to me when I was in school, and so I know that it does work. But, so the spirituality, for me, has rounded out my part of my balance, because I was so... When my other worlds were not where they should have been, it was impossible to have that spiritual component of my life. When my work world got better, when my relationships got better, when my physical world got better, the spirituality evolved. So I'm not sure that I could, I know for a fact, because I have friends who make millions of dollars a year, more than I could make in a lifetime. Their work world's messed up, their relationships are not what they should be, they eat and drink to excess, and I know their internal world is not the way it should be. Their inner peace is not there. So when I look at that circle of balance, I've said this before, the things that you don't pay for are the things that are most valuable to me. I mean, obviously, the health, the relationships, and the spiritual component of my life are much more important than my work world to me now. Doesn't mean I don't work real hard and I want to be the best that I can be, but the spirituality is a big part of my life.
What's the number one action that you took to enhance your spiritual life, and what's some things that our listeners can do to enhance their spiritual lives?
I tried to look at what was distracting me first in my ability to be with myself, and I found once again that the noise... I watch very little television. Like, I don't read papers like I used to read a newspaper. I found that I was being sucked in, if I don't want to say that word, by the media of, you know, having to know everything about everything in the world, having to know everything about, you know, what's on TV and watching sporting events. And I just realized that's not what's making me happy. It's not what's making me be a better person. And I couldn't reflect well if I wasn't taking that time. So eliminating a lot of the things. Now, obviously, I still have a cell phone. I don't put it on all the time, but I have email and I have all the things that distract you. But I make specific times to be quiet, and it takes work a lot of times to not. You know, it's so easy to put the car radio on, and it's also easy not to put it on, and to drive without it on, and just think about things that are important for you. Think about, you know, people that maybe are sick, and you want to say a little prayer for them, or do something that, you know, plan your day in your head. Versus, see, I don't need to hear the news and see how many people got killed the night before in Philadelphia. I'm going to find out eventually if something bad's happening out there. So I think it's a matter of, you know, devoting that, eliminating some things in your life that are making the noise in your life. And for everybody that may be different, but for me it was those things.
You mentioned James Ray, and many people, almost every American probably has heard about the law of attraction. And
yeah.
People have been to training sessions, not just now, but for years. They've read books, they listen to CDs, they read blogs. I mean, it's all based on that information, which has been repackaged and repackaged and repackaged. And although in the book it seems that you subscribe to certain aspects of the law of attraction, it seems like there's many people that just can't create the life that they really, really want to create. How or why does the law of attraction work for one person and not for another, in your opinion?
Well, I've read The Secret and listened to The Secret and the Law of Attraction, and I am a firm believer in that you do attract back to you what you put out there. And I think that too many times that when it's not working for people, I think that they oversimplified it, and it goes back to that sitting in the room saying, I want, I want, I want, I want. It's not about I want. It's about, you know, that thought with that emotion, creating that feeling and creating the action. And knowing that, you know, we're going to attract, and I really do believe you do attract back to you what you put out there. I mean,
yeah.
This takes it even one step a little bit further, because so many times the law of attraction, if you don't look at the bigger picture, and I alluded to this in relationships, I said you have to love yourself before you can love others. To have the law of attraction work for you, your job is really you. You have to fill yourself first. You have to have love of yourself to be able to do the things that are going to make you be better. And you have to fill yourself first. In fact, Charlie, my mentor, has a saying. It's an old saying in Latin. It says, Nemo non dat quod habet. It says, you cannot give what you do not have. And unless you're filling yourself with the right... You know, he used to have me in the morning say, Joe, how do you start your day when you shave? I go, I just shave. And he goes, when you're shaving, he says, I want you to repeat to yourself, I love myself, I love myself, I love myself. And in face value, that like could seem conceited or pride-oriented, but it had nothing to do with that. It had about instilling into me the thought that I love myself. And he said when you go, he had this in our bathrooms in our office, put a full-length mirror. And he said, when you go back to see your patient, before you go back, he says, you straighten your tie and you say, I love myself, I love myself, I love myself. And he says, I guarantee you'll treat your patient better. And that is related to the law of attraction. If you're a person who is making their life a struggle and isn't happy with themselves, it's pretty hard to attract to you, back to you, things that are going to improve your life. So it really goes back to, I say, you know, the job is you, and you have to fill yourself first. The book Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill is one of my Bibles that I use. It's probably 90 years old, and many, many things in there are related to the law of attraction. In fact, he lists, for the people who don't know about the book, it's by Napoleon Hill. It's a classic, and it's as current today as it was 90 years ago when it was written. In fact, they have a current version where you have updates of relating it to modern day things. But in that book, he lists the 7 positive and 7 negative emotions, and the importance of tying those emotions to your thinking, to to attract back to yourself the similar types of emotions. And he talks a lot about self-love and filling yourself first. So, I mean, the law of attraction for face value, when I find that people say that doesn't work or it doesn't work for me, is because they've oversimplified it and just think, well, they can say, well, I want this and I'm going to get this. It doesn't work like that. It really does require constant attention to the thought, constant attention to your feeling, and constant attention to your actions to create certain results. And it takes work to do it. It really does. It doesn't happen by sitting on the sofa watching ESPN. I can tell you that for sure. It doesn't.
You mean I can't just sit here and attract things and say, I want a Porsche and I like what you read and it'll make me really happy and I hope it's towing a new yacht and blah, blah, blah. Everything's not just going to come to me?
Not in my world, Mike. Everything I get, and people, I know you got to work for what you
want. Yeah, I don't know how it happens in Philadelphia, but in Kentucky, it doesn't work like that either.
It doesn't work like that.
No.
And I think the secret is a great piece to be out there, and it's a recounting of things from the past. There's nothing new that's been out since the Bible. This goes back. This is not new things, but to Buddha and people much beyond. But I think that it oversimplified it a little bit and made it seem like, you know, all you have to do is think these things and it's going to happen. And it's a little more than that.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit more complicated than that.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, we've been about 56 minutes so far. We've got time for another question, and this call is ultimately about success. So let's make our final question be all about that. So here's the hardest question I can think of that I could ask you. What is the one thing that people can do in order to be wildly, incredibly successful?
Well, when I look at the triangle and I look at the balance world, all those areas take commitment. You need a commitment to be good in your work world, in your marketing and your product. You need a commitment to be good in sales and the way you handle your customer. But more importantly, in your circle of balance, you need to be committed in your work. You need to be committed in your relationships. You need to be committed in your physical and your health world. And you need to be committed in your spirituality. And it takes, you know, I often ask the people that I talk to, I say, ask yourself, where are you in those areas especially in the circle of balance, from 0 to 10? Are you a 7 in your work world, or an 8? Where are you in your relationships? Are you a 5, a 9? In your physical and your spirituality, where are you? And what steps are you willing to take to be better in those areas? Because unless you're, and we didn't go into too much about commitment, I do a whole thing on commitment, but unless you're committed and do the work, it's not going to happen. Because I can tell you that to do all these things and have them work, it takes work, a commitment, and a price to pay. And on my business card, the back of it, it says, by my mentor, Charlie Schiavo, I'm going to read it, it says, you can have anything in life you want if you want it badly enough and are willing to pay the price and to take the action. So I think you have to be committed, you have to do the work, pay the price, and take the action.
Well, as you and I both know, that taking action part is probably the toughest part for people.
That's the key.
The one good thing is that you took action and responded to my plea to come on and further talk about this tremendous book that you wrote, and I appreciate that.
And I love being with you, Mike. Thank you. I appreciate it. And I hope the listeners get something out of it. And if you get a chance,
I don't think there's a chance that they did listen and didn't get something out of it. And we appreciate you taking your time. We know you're busy. We know it's late in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
I can't thank you enough. And look forward to hopefully having some more interaction with you.
It's been a pleasure being with you, Mike. I thank you for your time also.
Have a good night, sir.
Thank you. Good night. Bye-bye.